Blog Talk Radio.
Hollywood is a state of mind, and so is Islam. Tonight's show is going to be challenging the truth that President Barack Obama was either misguided in not revealing or afraid to say. He said no religion is responsible for terrorism. People are responsible for violence and terrorism. Well, God was the original layer down of the law. He did punish his people. He did usher punitive measures by death if the Jews in the wilderness would not serve him correctly. Some men were stuffed with quail because they complained that they were sick of the manna from heaven. But in the world of Islam, where there's been fighting years and years over the sons of Ali versus the Sunni Muslims who consider themselves more pure, there's a rift between the Sunnis and the Shias for the last 30 years that have killed over 2 million of their sons. Over 500,000 were killed in the Iran and in the Iraq war. The battle for Saudi Arabia in the early 30s, a third of the army was killed, the Ikhwan, by the rest of the Bedouin nomads that made up the tribe of Ibn Saud. 600,000 Shias died by the hands of Sunnis after the first Gulf War, before the beginning of the second one. The reason I played Hollywood tonight is we did interrupt the Oscars, and Julianne Moore just accepted her Academy Award for Best Actress. I believe the movie had something to do with autism. Now they're going to be announcing the best candidate for male. With that, I'm going to bring John into the show. Hi, John.
Hello, Hammer.
Here, let me play you a quick quip. It's Madonna's show, Hollywood, because I couldn't find the original. I couldn't find the original Hollywood. Doo, 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 doo,
oh,
Hollywood.
Yes. It's
doo,
showtime.
Doo, doo, doo. Yeah, well, we are interrupting the peak. There's like 10 minutes left of the Oscars. They're about to name Best Picture. It looks like they just announced the male candidate. I'm not sure who won. I can't see that.
And you know who? What I really I miss when they used to say the winner is. because we can't say, oh, someone's a loser. We have to say we're all winners.
So they don't say that anymore?
They usually say the Oscar goes to, you know. But back old school, it's like, the winners, da-da-da. It's like, I won't bring that back. Come on. We have losers. That's part of life. Deal with it.
Well, now it's like, it must be Best Picture because the whole entourage of people are coming up.
Right. And here's a question. How many times do you really watch a movie that's won an Oscar and enjoy it? I mean, it always has to be some serious film, some kind of dry, intellectual piece. Why can't it be comedy? Why can't it be Batman? It's like
well, actually, there was a farce in the top five, the Grand Budapest Hotel,
mm-hmm.
Which was actually kind of, I wouldn't call it slapstick. I don't know how you'd classify it, but I saw it like probably a year ago, and it was a good cast ensemble, but I didn't perceive it to be Oscar material.
Right, and the point is, each academy, each group says we cannot allow, you know, we can't be the group that votes for a comedy to win. Why can't a comedian win the best, you know? And I mean, you look back the last 30 or 40 years, it's always usually some kind of serious piece or some kind of noble environmental, you know, it's something with a specific message, and that's fine. I mean, I understand that on a consistent basis, but sometimes the best movie is a funny movie or it's an action movie.
Well,
you know,
I did hear on NPR this week there were some movie critics,
mm-hmm.
and they said definitely Steve Carell had no business being Oscar nominated as one of the top five actors. I didn't see the film he was in, but
mm-hmm.
they were going to hand it over to somebody else, so they didn't see him as a qualifier.
You know, they probably looked at the body of his work and other things, and it's an accumulative type of award. A lot of times you'll see people that maybe they've had 20 or 30 films, and they've been in years where they weren't the best film, but they were close, and so sometimes they'll get an Oscar just to, like, we got to make sure this person gets an Oscar because they have a reputation. And so it is a publicity thing. You know, they came up with the Oscars originally just to promote movies because people at the end of the year, they go, oh, let's give an award show, and all these people show up, and there's a bunch of buzz about it, and then people start saying, oh, that film, let's go see that film, or let's rent it, and you know, or let's watch it on TV and, you know, when it comes on. So it's a lot of it is to promote. It's really a big commercial is what it is for the industry, which is cool. It's all about business.
Yeah, well, I would call that German-made film The Budapest Hotel a farce because
mm-hmm.
it had a giant cast of like 20 people. I think even that girl from Girl in the Dragon Tattoo was in it. But anyways,
yeah.
Adrian Brody, William Dafoe, Jeff Goldblum, Harvey Keitel, Jude Law, Bill Murray, F. Murray Abraham, Ralph Fiennes, Tilda Swinton, Owen Wilson. It was like a giant slapstick humor type thing. I don't even know what you want to call it.
But I didn't
take it seriously when I saw it.
Right. Well, the other thing, too, is the top actor of the year wasn't even on the list. I mean, they left out, I wanted to say Bin Laden, they left off our president, President Obama, for best acting in a presidential role. I mean, I guess I'm probably cutting our headline.
I don't think I can hang up on my own show, but I'm going to slapstick your humor. I don't, you know what, I'm starting to think, okay, I already read the first quote by Obama. No
uh-huh.
religion is responsible for terrorism. People are responsible for violence and terrorism. It reminds me of that saying, guns don't kill people, people kill people.
Right, and it's a little bit, I don't know, there's a commercial on, I think it's from Geico or Progressive, it's one of these companies, and it says, you know, something like the reason why Pinocchio wouldn't make a good motivational speaker, right? And he's saying, "Oh, you've got the potential to make it." And his nose is growing, and you know, I believe in you. And his nose is growing more and more. It's like just write out the material for whoever's up there, the president. It's like just here's what we want you to say: say that you know, hey, it's nobody's fault. Say, we're your friend, and we love you, and we're going to make things all better. We're going to put a Band-Aid on your boo-boo, and it's all going to be nice. We'll make some cookies for you. And that's cool, But it's not the truth.
By the way, I just want to interject that Bob's on the line. I'm going to pull him in about 30 seconds.
Pull him in, Bob.
Well,
from the rain.
Okay, then I will, but I think what Obama's trying to do is, and I do want to interject something here. I had to take a 3-hour online course for Lauren. Did you know that some of the greatest geometry people and intellectual centers for learning were created by the Muslims?
Oh, yeah.
They crossed the region in northern Africa. They created intellectual centers in Timbuktu, which was part of Mali. And then they also created some of the original works of geometry. Let me say this quote by Obama, and then I'm going to bring Bob on. Islam has been woven into the fabric of our country since its founding. Now, I find that a little far-fetched, but let's just continue. Generations of Muslim immigrants came here and went to work as farmers and merchants and factory workers, helped to lay railroads and build up America. The first Islamic center in New York City was founded in the 1890s, America's first mosque. This was an interesting fact, and it was not in New York City, but in North Dakota. Okay, well, I don't want to get into all this hairy stuff, but he wrote, "No religion is responsible for terrorism. People are responsible for violence and terrorism." Now, I was not really familiar with the Islamic religion until I met two friends in my grad program, one from Yemen and one from Bangladesh. So I didn't know it was a 100-year institution in this country. Let's pull Bob in. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Yeah,
good evening on Oscar night.
Good evening.
And it's raining cats and dogs,
night.
Too, right now.
Yeah.
It's raining in L.A.?
It's pouring right now.
Yes, it is raining here in L.A. The United States has significant economic relations with the with Muslim countries, and for that reason, American leaders do what they can to be on good terms with Muslim countries. And although
John feels like Obama watered down the definition of ISIS in the sense that, by the way, there was a poll taken in America. And 20% of Americans think that ISIS is the mainstream part of the Islam religion. So 20% of Americans are so ignorant that they don't even know that ISIS is a offshoot warring tribe of Islamic fundamentalists. So let's set the record straight. What are we here to prove tonight?
Well, coming from my point of view, I think it in a certain way, you shouldn't judge a religion by some wacky, crazy people in the wilderness. There's always, you can take any religious thought or idea, and you'll find someone that's crazy. And they're going to kill someone justifying it by using their religion. I think you have to look at the root, the core, the leader of the religion. And so let's take Christianity. It's Jesus. And what does he teach? To forgive. To keep the commandments. Love your neighbors yourself. Honor thy father and mother. His message was forgiveness and sacrificing and becoming. He said, "I came here to be servant. I'm the way, the truth, and the life." He's trying to give life, love, share the good gospel means good news. Okay, and that's his life. He lived a peaceful life and he was killed for it. Now you take Muhammad. He had a tough upbringing. He was orphaned, and he was raised by his uncle. So there's certain things fundamentally in this person's life. I don't downplay or say it's not justified. Things happen in people's lives that create the person they are.
Married an older woman.
Right. I mean, Hitler wanted to be an artist. That was his thing in life. I mean, if you gave him really what he wanted to do in life, is to do art and, be an artistic person. and instead he veered due to circumstances in Germany. Now, in this case of Muhammad, as he grew up, he basically got into a situation where he got these revelations from God, and it gave him power. And after 8 years of fighting with Meccan tribes, Muhammad gathered an army of 10,000 Muslim converts and marched on the city of Mecca, and they took it over. So the foundational concept of this religion is get an army, go and take out the people that are against you. Jesus didn't gather people with swords. Muhammad did. So when you go to the core, the leadership of it, and the core foundational concept of jihad and of, you know, the infidels, taking care of the infidels, it's a violent religion. I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm just saying they're going to be violent and they're going to kill people because that's what the leader did. You know, a Christian is not going to, at its core value, is not going to be grabbing a gun and killing someone. Now,
well,
I
am going to let Bob talk, but one aspect that I gained from living with Muslims for 5 years in Reseda is that, they accept Jesus as a prophet but not the Savior, but Muslims
right.
consider to restore, they try to blend the monotheistic faith into the whole concept of the sons of Adam, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and they considered Muhammad as the kind of unifying final prophet.
Yeah.
So the most altruistic Muslims, you know, what they're trying to do is simplify the meaning of God by
right.
saying God
right.
is one.
Yeah, they're saying Jesus was
Bob,
a warm-up.
The expert comment.
Right. And they're saying Jesus was the warm-up act, and, you know, Muhammad was the headliner. And, you know, coming from their perspective, I can understand. It gives them power. Let's hear from Bob.
Yeah, hi. Islam is not parallel with Christianity or any other of the world's major religions, in that the Muslim religion has a very deep teaching that they're right and that everyone else is wrong, and beyond that, that people who are who think very differently, people who have bad opinions of the Muslim religion and of Muhammad, should be killed. I don't know how to put it anymore. I can't be softer, about this. It's a very difficult religion.
It is, because they're even fighting to this day over who should have succeeded Muhammad as the next caliphate. Like
yeah,
the daughter of Fatima, they're still fighting over crap that happened 10 centuries ago.
So you're saying that at its core, it's a peaceful, nice religion as long as you believe and do exactly as they say. And the minute you don't, you're off with your head.
Bob?
I was going to say, which is kind of, you know, that's kind of the problem with it, is like they can show you that.
Bob dropped the line by mistake. I don't know what happened.
Maybe he got rained away. Let's let the tide bring him back. Can we pull him in?
The thing is, John, is I guess the battle is I don't know, you know, we live in a secular society that encompasses a lot of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me thinks that Obama phrased his speech just to try not to piss off people who actually were Muslims, because I read an article earlier today that his one of his secretaries of defense, or I wasn't sure if it was that guy, or it was the Secretary of Homeland Security. He said that his name is Jeh Johnson, J-E-H. He said he goes to visit other mosques, and people tell him that these ISIS people are not the aspect of Islam that their religion represents. But that's such a small minority of Americans. I mean, we got to know who we're fighting, and they're fighting till their death. So even if they are committed till their grave, we still have to know who we're fighting. They're not just a bunch of a loose confederation of killers. They have a purpose, and it is the Islam domination.
And more importantly, so if we were to run any of those countries, they're more than welcome to go to their mosques and to serve their God. But if we were taken over by and run by clerics and a high religious Islamic hierarchy, you wouldn't be able to go to your Christian church peacefully. You wouldn't be able to display your Christianity or share it. You'd be running for your life. And that's the difference. It's like they're saying, yeah, we're all peaceful and cool in a balanced society, but you get a totally unbalanced situation where you guys are in control. You're not peaceful. You're not nice. You're not, you know, to people who believe differently. Now, as long as you embrace their faith, yeah, they love you. They're cool. As long as you're not female, as long as you're not you don't counter any of the rules that they have. And it's a little different here. Now, we're on the other end. We're so tolerant. You can do anything you want, practically, and we love you. But it's not that's the reality of it. Don't need to sugarcoat it. Don't need to lie about it. It is what it is. And it shows itself in the headlines every day. That's who they
I'll
are.
I'll give you an example. The Quran 2, verses 191 to 193. And kill them wherever you find them, and turn them out from where they have turned you out. And al-fitna, disbelief or unrest, is worse than killing. But if they desist, then lo, Allah is forgiving and merciful. And fight them until there is no more disbelief and worshiping of others with Allah. And worship is for Allah alone. But if they cease, there will be no transgression except against al-Zaliman, the polytheists and wrongdoers. And it says in this website that 109 verses call Muslims to war with non-believers for the sake of Islamic rule. Because
right.
In the caliphates, they don't separate public rule from religious rule.
Right. Now, in fairness to them, they can take Old Testament scripture, they could take things that Christians believe, take a couple scriptures out of context and go, hey, go kill these people, go kill these, you know, this group. But I'm just saying, as the core foundational precept or concept that they work with, one of their things is that to establish righteousness, and then people who stand in the way of that need to be eliminated. And that is a part of a core value that they have. And we don't have that core value. Now, it doesn't mean we don't do it. It doesn't mean we don't do it subliminally, like funding other countries and sneaking money into different groups. It's a dogfight out there. But what I'm saying is you won't find it in the Constitution. It's like go into the world and, you know, find the anti-Americans and, you know, eliminate them till they no longer exist. It's not in our...
Well, you know what I find disturbing? Even in a perfect world where, for example, I was reading a biography today on the succession. It was called Inside the Kingdom, about the Saudi rulers. Like the 4 to 7 brothers that have ruled over the last 100 years, and they're seeking God's perfect will and the divine rule. But even if people subscribe to the highest reflection of God's will, but then yet they're imposing judgment on other individuals whose soul they cannot read. I mean, it's surprising that the Islamic faith has actually lasted this long with all the killings. They kill people left and right. They subdue women. They deny people basic opportunities. Like there was no female education in Saudi Arabia till 1965. I mean, it's really surprising that they even survived this long. That only those early stages, like when they were in, there were invaders in the Gold Coast of West Africa, and there were like these big centers of worship that I studied about in my son's online history. And that was the golden age of Islam, when they created art and all this different categories of study. Like, That was like the golden age when they allowed other people to live in their kingdom, like Jews and Christians, and they didn't persecute them, they only taxed them. And now it's just like some kind of raging, out-of-control, headless monster.
Well, also, I think you asked the question, what's the appeal of it? It's a religion of empowerment, and if you look at some of the people that they get into it, example like Malcolm X, we had a show on him last week, and when you start delving into people's background, like I'll give you an example. I've been watching Gotham, and it's basically the Batman, pre-Batman, before Batman was Batman. And it's the child years of Bruce Wayne, but it's not so much centered on him. It's centered on the people around him, Commissioner Gordon. It's on the Penguin, the Riddler, the Joker, and all these characters, Catwoman that we know. But it's showing them before they became who they are. Some of it's true to the book. Some of it they're improvising. But the point is, these people didn't start out bad. They were good people trying to do stuff, trying to help the police, trying to get their life together. And, their dad would get killed, or their mom would, orphan them or whatever. You start looking at some of the people that are into this, like with Malcolm X. His dad was hit by, killed when he was 6 years old. It was called an accident on a streetcar, but they believe he was really murdered. And the point is, they didn't get the support. His mom was a single mom and basically had a nervous breakdown, was committed to Kalamazoo State Hospital. So the children were separated and sent to foster homes. So, you got Malcolm Little is his name, growing up, and he's got all these problems. He doesn't have the dad, doesn't really have the mom's support. And you go out into this white world in a time when there's racism, extreme racism, and he gets involved in trouble, gambling, drug dealing, racketeering, robbery, pimping, all kinds of just bad stuff. He even says, according to some biographies, he had sex with other men for money. So you get Malcolm X. So he ends up in prison. Yeah.
So, I feel like the Black Muslim movement in America was a way for Black men at that time to disempower themselves from being compared to white society,
right,
and to create a separate identity that they could feel empowered. But it created more division than help.
Right, because what happened, he ended up in prison, and he actually, got the nickname Satan. So he in 48, he writes a letter to Elijah Muhammad, the leader of Islam, and he asks, and then Muhammad advises him to renounce his past, humbly bow in prayer to Allah, and promise never to engage in destructive behavior again. And then he began to pray, and he began to reform his life. He got out of prison, and he started to educate himself, and he was a powerful speaker, and so forth, and so he was born. And what I'm saying is, these people ran into times of crisis. Remember Ike and Tina Turner, she was very abused by Ike for years, and in the middle of all this abuse, she turned to become a Buddhist. In her down, this totally bottom of her life, didn't know, what to do. And she found something that gave her power, gave her the ability to cope. And I had, a situation in my life where, I was raised a Christian, but I got to the point I hit bottom. And I really had to cling on to my faith, and it brought me through. So I can't just totally belittle a Muslim if, it empowered them to get out of prison or to get out of the cellar of life. But that's the lure of these certain religions. It gives you the ability to believe
and
have faith.
Well, let's try to reinforce the fact that in Christianity, Jesus loosened the threshold of being subjected to the law,
right,
like all those rules in Leviticus and Exodus. Jesus wanted a liberation, and his central message was loving and serving others. And if you made that the center of your focus, then you would be able to liberate yourself by realizing that life could only be completed by loving your neighbor as yourself, and finding the true message of love in practice,
right,
and deed.
But now let's say
I'm
in
not
this
making
particular
it very
case,
succinct.
Right, but what happens if you're, say, a minority or black person, and you encounter people with their, you know, with their crosses and their the white the hoods over their head and so forth, and they believe in God and Jesus, but they're going to treat you as lower
class.
Well, they
went through it. It would be, in my opinion, it's called a period of trial, because even though someone said this in a twisted manner, the black nation, when they were come to America as slaves for 400 years, and then they were liberated in the 1860s, but not completely, because it took about another 50 years for them to, you know, get land and stuff. They, even their soul was so rich and powerful, and the spirituals that they created and the hymns they sang, and they were kind of like the soul of the nation, in the sense that their testimony of suffering is still being recorded in movies such as 12 Years a Slave and other things, and God manifested their trial into something greater. But of course, there's been setbacks in the black liberation movement, and there's still persecution today, as we saw in Ferguson, and now the U.S. Justice Department is going in there for a full investigation of the Ferguson PD. But basically what I'm trying to say is, no matter what color you are or your period of trial and suffering, if you believe in the greater good, as my Muslim friend Ronak does, like, she's basically a small businesswoman in downtown L.A., but she does quite well for herself. She drives a Mercedes and a BMW, and, you know, she has gotten up from the bootstraps mentality. But basically, people can combine different ideologies of other cultures in America, as she has, empowering herself as a woman and being a Muslim, able to drive and do all these other things. And we can put definitions and consequences on things, but it's really up to the individual how much they want to subjugate themselves to the stringent qualities of their religion and their lifestyle choices.
Well, it's interesting with Malcolm X, kind of delving into the core teachings. He was with the Nation of Islam in 1952 until he broke with it in 64. He promoted the nation's teachings. These include the beliefs that black people are the original people of the world, maybe, that white people are devils, that blacks
no,
are
that's
superior.
A little far-fetched.
Blacks are superior to whites. Well, maybe on a basketball court, and that the demise of the white race is imminent. Now, realize he was within the nation. He was, I mean, this is what he was promoting. Now, the nation tried to kind of, rein him in, curb him, because he was really pushing it hard, and they didn't want to have the consequence, the repercussion of that. They're trying to blend in. But basically, he left the nation. You know, it's like the same thing with Muhammad Ali. He was very into it, and until they turned their back on him, and so he actually, you know, they kind of reinvented themselves. And in Malcolm's case, he organized a black nationalist organization. You know, he kind of set up his own little group. But in the end, he got killed by his own people. They're the ones who
took
him down.
Yeah, wasn't it? Was it Louis Farrakhan or some descendant of his?
That's what they say. If Farrakhan denies, you know, that he was that he did it, they gave the order, but rather that Malcolm's consequences, basically he brought himself to his own demise, and that he didn't directly do it, but that, you know, basically the way Malcolm was living, it kind of justified what happened to him. But he probably did give the kill order, you know, probably. But subliminally, yeah, just like I'm sure
the
president.
Malcolm X is one person I don't know that much about, but basically, you could classify him as a through speech as an extremism, and also a divider of the human spirit. Now, terrorist, I'm not sure, but I'd have to look into his background a little more. But
what's interesting is
I think a lot of black men felt so disenfranchised that they were looking for a philosophy or religion that could completely empower but disengage from the white race at the same time.
Well, too, kind of what he ran into is, as he was traveling worldwide and spreading his message, he started running into situations where there were white people supporting him. And in other countries that weren't majorly black, you know, that they had influential white people. And so it kind of, he had to redefine. He started to change some of his views because he realized these are white people that love him and are fighting for him. And he had to start to, he kind of had to, what he stated in later days is just that, I'll just read the words here. I did many things as a black Muslim. I'm sorry for now. I was a zombie then. Like all black Muslims, I was hypnotized, pointed in a certain direction, and told to march. Well, I guess a man's entitled to make a fool of himself if he's ready to pay the cost. It cost me 12 years. That was a bad scene, brother.
So he was in prison 12 years?
No, he's just talking about that it took 12 years of him to kind of like turn his thinking around.
Well, look at somebody like Ahmad Rashad who played for the Vikings. I mean, him and Felicia Rashad are popular people, and nobody even challenged their Islamic beliefs because, they converted in the mid-80s, back when Islam wasn't a dirty word, so to speak. It's only been in the last 13 years or so, since 2001, or 14 years, that the whole crux of the Islam religion has really been challenged or examined.
Right, because it kind of got mixed in with when basketball players and athletes started changing their names, you know, like Lou Alcindor went to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Which was also the Keith Wilkes became Jamal Wilkes, for playing for the Lakers in L.A. And a lot of that was inspired by Cassius Clay, of course, changing his name to Muhammad Ali. And so by the time the 80s hit, The Cosby Show was the number one sitcom in the country. It was kind of a model for the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was coming out, and there was a lot of, like, Black is Beautiful and this integration of let's accept, you know, the minorities here, let's make up for the sins of the past. So Felicia Rashad was perfect for that kind of role, and same thing with her husband. He was, you know, a successful football player, and then even I think more successful as in the business as a commentator for sports events. So it wasn't looked at them as being radical Muslims who were terrorists or anything like that.
I guess basically the whole thing is that, you know, unless there's a direct threat, things don't have to come under scrutiny. Like, I don't question the legitimacy of my friend Ronak praying in a mosque, or my friend Farida, or my other friend Fakah. And I don't question her, but once there's some kind of conflict that presents a nature of discussion. For example, one time Fakah in the grad program did a thing on the how Palestine was becoming more enclosed.
Hey, Big Bob.
And then that the Jews were pressuring Palestine, you know, and blocking off exits and stuff. I mean, it wasn't until those types of things came into play that I had to, like, face her head on about certain disagreements I had between the Jews and the Arabs.
I think the main...
Do you have another call, by the way?
I actually have Bob on the line with me. And actually, Bob, we're in the last 7 minutes of the show. And Jane was just...
No. Really?
Yeah,
because... I got the message that the show will begin in 25 minutes.
Right. I think in the last maybe 10 minutes or so, people aren't able to call in because it's, I guess, a feature...
It's in a recording mode.
Okay.
It's in a recording mode. But we were just commenting just on how the Muslim faith is very empowering to people. If you look at the backgrounds of the people in it, such as Malcolm X, where the dad died at an early age in a car accident, and they suspect murder, but no, of course, being a poor black family, no one followed through, and his mom ended up in a nut house, and he had to fend for himself. So after ending up in prison by drug dealing and pimping and doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
Are you talking about Kabila?
Basically, he just turned his life around in prison through the Muslim faith. So we're kind of commenting on how it's a religion that empowers, you know, minorities, black people especially, and it gives them faith and hope. So I don't want to – there is a reason. There's a valid reason why it's powerful. And we need to be aware.
You can put Bob up to the, is he calling on your cell phone?
Yeah, he is on the cell phone. I'm sorry.
If he has a comment,
you're
going to have to squish the phone up to your phone.
Right. And so I was just going to say to Bob is just that we were just commenting on how it's understandable. Like, we have to, in a way, try to understand where they're coming from, that this is a religion that empowers them. And if we challenge it just by taking the bone from the dog is going to bite. And so we do need to use caution and wisdom. And but on the other hand, we need to be aware that the faith that they embrace, when fully empowered, is dangerous to a Christian or anyone on the planet that's not a Muslim. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's a couple things going on. The truth is that a big hunk of Muslim worldwide would fall in the category of fundamentalist, of extremist, of extremist, of fanatics, and if you put them all together, they would make up the entire population of several Muslim countries. But instead, they're distributed in they're a minority in this country, and a minority in that country, and a minority in the,
difference is?
Or the Islamic State enables them to be in control of a piece of territory where if they, in the normal circumstances, they would simply be a minority. What I'm trying to say is that Muslim fanatics are not out of the norm. Muslim fanatics make it probably 25% of all Muslims.
That's what Christian Radio said. Christian Radio said this week that
it's... is that because of the United States' important economic relations with Muslim countries, the president and the heads of all the big corporations are all doing everything they can to soft pedal events, as opposed to the American people, who have a very bad opinion. Overall, most Americans have a bad opinion of Islam. Based on the things that they see happening. Big oil companies, do everything they can to.
John, we only have enough time for the final thoughts.
Right. Right. In fact, I'll let
John?
Bob know. So, Bob, I guess what you're saying is that the Islam faith is okay and safe if taken in very small quantities, kind of like chocolate or any other thing that you could consume. But if you take too much of it, it's fatal. It's kind of what you're saying.
Right. That Christianity is a fraud.
Wow. Well, we're in the last couple minutes of the show. I think we wanted to do closing thoughts because I think we got 2 minutes left. Should we start with Jane?
Yeah, my final thought is just that we live under a microscope now with social media and worldwide cameras everywhere. And there was a blogger I mentioned in my article in Saudi Arabia who got 10 years imprisonment for going against the Saudi government. And different factions of Islam is rising, like the Shias in Yemen who just overthrew their government. And every day we're digesting all different aspects of Islam as well as other chaos in the world. And it just, with drones and all that other stuff, the U.S. being able to fight, it just makes everything a lot more confusing. I'll let somebody else go.
Okay, I'll say follow the truth where it leads you, unless it's in a Muslim training school and the class is Bomb Making 101. any closing thoughts, Bob?
No.
I think...
Okay, mine is follow the truth wherever it leads you, unless it's a small Pakistani school in the mountains. Because a bunch of kids got killed there a couple months ago and for no reason at all. and they just strip people of their own. These crazy Islamic fighters are just like ruining different proportions and stratifications of the culture by just outright killing people.
It is
John, wrap it up, Yoder.